I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
We have our special guest today, author Randy Fertel. He is the author of the book, The Gorilla Man and the Empress of Steak.
Yes, which is a memoir about New Orleans and his family, emphasizing his mother and father. Right. Very strange father.
Yeah, kind of an eclectic family. They were the founders, right, of like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Well, his mom was.
His mother was.
His mom
was,
yeah. And his father ran for mayor of New Orleans, got about 300 votes, and his campaign was get gorillas for the zoo.
Yeah, the zoo needs a gorilla.
So they know him as the Gorilla Man.
Right. It's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, so stick around, listen to this. And, you know, the interesting thing about this, I had him on the show before. We talked about his scholarly book, A Taste of Chaos, The Art of Improvisation in Writing. I'm probably butchering the title, but so this is our second time, but this time we're going to talk about his family and his memoir. I don't know. I couldn't help but read about Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. It's hard to say. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Say that three times real fast.
Have you ever heard of the steakhouse?
I've heard of it, and I've longed to enter its doors, and yet I've never had the opportunity. So
yeah, it's one of those really nice steakhouses that you only find in big cities and Las Vegas. Like a Martin Steakhouse or something like that.
They have one in Fresno, actually.
Fresno's got some pretty good steakhouses.
Do they? Yeah. Are they known for steakhouses?
Well, there's a lot of egg money there.
Yeah, that's right. There is.
But it's a really high-end steakhouse with dry-aged steaks.
Dry-aged. I've never had
and,
that.
You know, as I was reading it, I couldn't help but think, and this is probably really horrible. I'll let you judge me on this one, Tim. I kept thinking, I hope he offers us a gift certificate. I hope he likes our interview so much. He says, gentlemen, here's a $100 gift certificate for both of you.
Thank you so much. As a token of my gratitude, it probably won't work out that way. Yeah, it never does.
I'm going to hint it anyway.
All right. I'll back you up on that.
But even if we don't get it, we do have a copy of his book, and it was really a fun read. But it did make me hungry because, you know, quite frankly, I do like a good ribeye.
You know, the other day I made a couple of steaks themselves. Don't even ask me what kind. That's just how much of a connoisseur I am.
Well, how much did they cost?
Is that how you can judge it? Okay, these were probably like $12 for two.
So. How big were they?
They were like maybe like the size of my hand.
They're probably top sirloin.
Like the size of my hand.
They're probably top sirloin.
I have like a medium-sized hand. Yeah. I have like the hand of a 41-year-old man.
Maybe they were top sirloins, which really isn't the best. Right. I'm sorry.
I mean, they were tasty, you know? The gristle. I was all about the gristle. You know, I was all about the gristle.
No, I'm sure they were good. Did you barbecue them or did you?
I put them on the grill. It was just only salt and pepper. I put them on the grill.
That's the best way to salt and pepper.
And they were a little bloody, so that was nice. I like them that way. I like my steaks rare.
Yeah, you know? Me too.
Yeah, so that was good.
You know, Gordon Ramsay says that you shouldn't put the salt and pepper on until after you turn it over.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but he sears the steaks on a metal pan.
So nothing. He just puts the steak naked on the grill like that.
And then turns it over, and then you put the salt and pepper.
Why is that? Is there a reason for that?
Because I don't know, but I assume it's because that way the salt and pepper doesn't really compete with the taste of the meat. If it's a quality steak.
You don't want that warring going on.
If it's not a steak that you bought, you know, 2 for 99 cents like you did.
Exactly. No, I got it in the Walmart. Hey, do you remember, like back in the day when they had Kmart, they had a giant, those giant plastic pools and they had filled it with sub sandwiches and they parked it out front.
Absolutely.
And you buy it like $5 for $1.
Oh, that's I used to love those sub sandwiches.
You know about them, see?
Those little stringy, slimy onions.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, they're all like wilted and warm. We just eat them. My parents would buy them for us and then we'd be happy while we shop.
I used to love those, man. I used to look forward to Kmart because of those.
And see, that's why my appreciation for steak is so low now.
Well, we have very similar backgrounds. We come from similar economic backgrounds. We come from a similar city.
Right.
And I remember we used to go to Kmart. That was the highlight, was the sub sandwiches and the Icy's.
Oh, the Icy's.
But
that's right.
When I was a kid, I hated steak. I thought it was the worst thing in the world. And the reason why I see now is because my mom bought kind of steaks that you bought the other day. Just no, I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Mom would buy the cheapest cut, of course, because you know we didn't have we didn't spend a lot of money on food,
right?
And so they're really thin steaks, and
it's called salami. Was it?
Yeah, probably, but no, they were actual steaks. I don't know what cut they were, and then she would fry them with lard in a cast iron thing, and and she would fry the hell out of them. Because, you know, we came from
like
a very,
yeah,
you know, I think in our days, when we grew up, working class families ate their steaks well done,
right?
You know, which kind of culturally makes sense. I haven't argued as to why, but I guess we don't have to get into that. So there were these charred, really dry, chewy, horrible things. And then I remember the first time I got a job at a steakhouse, it was a nice one, Black Angus. I don't know if you remember that place.
I do. Yeah. That was the place you take your dates.
Well, it's a place where I work.
You saved up for a month. Yeah, oh, you worked there?
I worked there.
Wow.
And all the waitresses, they were all waitresses except for me. All the waitresses, whenever Mexicans came in, they would go, oh, no, who's going to take the Mexicans?
They'd go, Daniel.
And they go, they're just going to want their steaks well done. They're going to want their steaks well done, and they're not going to tip. And it was true.
It was true.
It was true. And in the most part, Mexicans had their steak well done. And I you know, I figured out the reason why. They grew up like I did. But when I learned how to eat a medium rare steak, a T-bone, yeah. I thought, dang, that's my mom didn't know how to cook.
About how old were you when that happened? When you came to that
awakening? Oh, I was
awakening.
Probably 21 when I worked at Black Angus.
Oh, all right.
Had my first really good steak. So now I love steak.
Nice, nice. Maybe Black Angus wasn't as progressive, though, as Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, you know. You know, they only had one Latino working for them, what, in Fresno? Is that, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, well, you know, Fresno.
California.
Yeah, I was the only Latino, and I was the only male waiter.
Right, see? And at Ruth's, at least, there they had what? They were progressive. They had the women that were working there, probably one of the first fine dining, and they had an African-American community. Well, hey, I look forward to talking with Randy Fertel about all of this steak goodiness.
And let's see if we can get a free steak out of this.
All right.
We have something at stake. We'll be right back.